on Straight Talk Africa, constitutional presidential term limits. Most Africans surveyed believe they are vital for good governance and socio-economic justice. What about you? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Esther Gidou-Yuart, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on the significance of constitutional presidential term limits in Africa.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
During the 1990s, many African countries introduced presidential term limit provisions in their constitutions. But in recent years, several countries have shifted the constitutional goalposts. My colleague, Paul Ndiho, has more.
A study done by Afrobarometer, a pan-African non-partisan polling firm that conducts public surveys on democracy and governance in Africa, revealed that the public support for presidential term limits among citizens is at all-time high, with very few exceptions. But political maneuvering to remove or circumvent term limits by some heads of state is alarming. The new kid on the block, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, is proposing to amend his nation's constitution to introduce term limits, even though Ethiopia is a parliamentary system which does not normally require term limits. In April 2018, Sierra Leone's opposition leader, Julius Maada Bio, was sworn in as president, replacing incumbent President Ernest Bai Koroma, who abided by the country's constitution. In January 2018, George Weah, a former international football star, was sworn in as president of Liberia, succeeding incumbent Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who stepped down at the end of her second constitutionally allowable term. In 2016, voters in Senegal cast their ballots in a referendum to reduce the country's presidential term from 7 years to 5 years. Senegal's move is in stark contrast to many of Africa's long-time leaders who have successfully amended their nation's constitution. For example, in Burundi and other East African countries, incumbent presidents have exploited ambiguities in the law to extend their terms. In Rwanda's latest election, President Paul Kagame won with nearly 100% of the vote, securing a third term in office. Kagame's re-election came after a constitutional amendment which ended a two-term limit, allowing him to remain in power until 2034. Last December, Uganda's parliament voted to lift the age limit for the presidency, setting the stage for the long-time leader Yoweri Museveni to rule indefinitely. Museveni changed the constitution in 2005 to abolish term limits. Congolese President Joseph Kabila is still clinging to power after his second term expired in 2016, and it remains to be seen what his next move will be. Equatorial Guinea's President Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo has ruled since August 1979. He won a fifth seven-year term in 2016. In neighboring Cameroon, Paul Biya, who has been in power for 36 years, but he's facing his most serious political crisis yet over the ongoing internal conflict involving the Anglophone Cameroonians and the government. Idriss Déby, who has ruled Chad for 28 years, could stay in power until 2033. Elsewhere, Sudan's Omar al-Bashir has been in power for 29 years. Political observers say weak institutions and rubber-stamp parliaments make it easier for presidents to eliminate term limits. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here in the studio are three distinguished guests. Kamisa Kamara, Director, Sub-Saharan Africa Partners Global. Mary Uwera, Coordinator, Watch Democracy Grow Organization. And last but not least, Dr. Ken Oparo, School of Foreign Service, Georgetown University. I have to say that, ladies and gentlemen, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give our audience a chance to call in with your question or comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Kamisa. First of all, where have you been? We haven't seen you for many, many years, really.
Well, so after the defeat of Hillary Clinton, about a year and a half ago, I decided to take a break. And then I decided to publish quite a lot about democracy in Africa and go back to my Sahel region, which is my region of expertise. But here I am.
So what kind of group is Partners Global? Because the last time I checked, you used to be at the National Endowment for Democracy, correct?
True. So Partners Global is a non-governmental organization based in Washington, D.C. We do implement democracy governance-related programs around the world, and I'm in charge of the Africa program.
Very interesting. Who sponsors it?
So it's not a sponsor mechanism that we have. We do seek foreign funding. We currently have a lot of State Department funding in Sub-Saharan Africa, as well as USAID, and we're trying to expand to different regions of the continent.
I know that you have had opinions regarding the topic that is at hand.
True.
What do you think about it? Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
Term limits. I think term limits is always a good thing. If you look at it as one tenant in the same house for 30 years, that person is probably not going to be inclined to repaint the house or to change the furniture. But if you have somebody else coming in after 5 years, the person will see all of the little faults in this house and will change the furniture and will repaint the house and will probably modernize the system under which this house has been functioning. So I am all for term limits. Of course, I am not going to be telling you that I am for presidents for life. I don't think that this is a way to run a democracy. And I think a renewal of the political class is necessary to any good functioning democracy.
So what about someone who will come back and say, wait a minute, we know about Lee Kuan Yew, who happened to be prime minister of Singapore for 31 years. And he did a terrific job in making sure that he essentially develops his country, which was third world, to a first world.
This person is certainly an exception rather than a rule. I don't know that you can name many African leaders who've been in power for 30 years and tell me that they have done a terrific job and that they should stay there, right? So I think, again, the renewal of the political class is a democratic principle that's not necessarily confined to the African continent, but it can and should be expanded to other regions of the world. And it has been practiced in the U.S. When the United States of America, a president has two terms and then leaves, and there is never a question of whether this person will stay in power. And actually what puzzles me most of the time is, well, if you know how serious it is to be a president, and if you're accountable to 60, 70 million of people, why would you want to stay in power for so long? I think it's necessary for you to take a break and do something else with your time.
Very interesting. What about you, Mary Uwera? I have to say that your last name seems to mean, if I can remember correctly, someone that is pure. Is that true?
Yeah, that's what it means in my language, yes.
So are you pure or something close to that?
There is nobody who is pure but God.
So what is this group that you are coordinating?
It is a non-profit organization aimed at integrating. She's implementing and there is promotion. But in the real sense for us, we are aiming at integration. Because for years, there have been promotion, they have been implementing, but it is evident that we need really integration of democracy on the African continent. And is what we stand for.
So are you talking about, doing business with the African diaspora around here?
Yeah, sure, because when you consider integrating democracy, to be sincere, African continent, it's so hard to integrate it. So a real voice will come from the Africans in diaspora because, A, they are free. Two, that's they are in where politically the environment is easy for that process. And so we think if it starts here, it can spread to the rest in terms of hopefully integrate it in schools and universities and so on and so forth.
So I'll put the same question to you. What do you think about term limits? Are they good or bad? Especially given, frankly, that you come from the Republic of Rwanda, which overwhelmingly, at least from what we are told, agreed that incumbent president, Major General Paul Kagame, retired but certainly not tired, should stay into power because without him, probably there would not be a Rwanda.
For the issue of term limit, I will just give you quick 5 points why we really need term limit, especially on the continent. And I will come back to the issue of Rwanda because, remember, I'm on Africa, so I don't want to dwell more on Rwanda, but when it comes to be a case study, definitely I will address it. I consider term limit to democracy as like blood is to human life. So term limits allows the circulation of democracy in the system. So at any material time, if it is not permitted, that means we are not going to have a healthy democracy. Number two, term limit is necessary to reduce the coups. We have the reason why we have coups on the continent, it's because men and women in uniform cannot just stand to see a civilian leader or a military leader take advantage of on what they fought for.
Fortunately, coups are no longer in vogue. No one, in fact, recognizes coups anymore. Maybe we should look at the manner in which some of these elections, some call them selections, are conducted.
They are no longer permitted, but if you consider the change in Zimbabwe, you cannot fail to say there was somehow a force of change, which was positive, by the way, which I actually support, because instead of bloodshed, totally the military men and women did what they are supposed to do, which is to protect and serve the sovereignty of their country. So they are not there officially, but practically we see them in another form. So term limit will reduce that problem. Three, term limit will reduce the problem of crimes committed by the leaders. The reason why we see human rights abuses or violence on the continent, it's because of overstaying. When people start complain, there comes a notion of suppressing that voice, either through assassinations, through imprisoning of political opponents. So that will be reduced if we allow term limit. Three, we have to think of healthy of the leaders and the nations. So term limits, if you consider a case of FDR, the time he went for a third office, he was totally not able to be able to end it, actually fourth office, because of his health issues. Exactly. So you don't want really leaders who are going to die in the office, because if we have ended the era of kingship, we don't want kingship in terms of presidents. So that is the third thing, for the betterment of the people and the betterment of the leaders too. The third thing is for, the fourth thing would be for, in the real sense, the doctrine of opportunity for all. If we are to promote democracy, we will promote opportunity for all. Shaka will be the president of Uganda. She will be the president of another thing. That way we are getting new ideas and new generations into the system. So I support the notion of term limit.
Very interesting. What about you, Ken Opala? You are a professor of politics.
Yes. So I am definitely for term limits. For the reasons that have been already outlined. And I'd like to add two more. especially when we focus on sub-Saharan Africa. So most of the sub-Saharan African states are multi-ethnic, or you know, in cases like Somalia, they have clans, which requires some sense of power sharing across different ethnic groups or across different clans. And term limits allow for circulation of leadership across different groups, so that you don't have the same sets of elites controlling both the political sector and the economic sector through time. Because when that happens, that's when you lose this notion of, you know, new ideas cycling in, both in terms of public policy, but also on the economic side. And, you know, you can see, for example, what's happening now in Angola and what happened in Mozambique or what's happening in Ethiopia, right? Nobody can say that the three countries are, you know, paragons of democracy, but we see what leadership change can do in terms of shifting countries in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I think when you think about power, I think, you know, I tend to believe as a political scientist that there are no good leaders out there. What we have are constrained leaders, right? So you need leaders who are constrained, knowing that they have 10 years to rule, 5 or 10 years, and within that time they have to do what's necessary to secure their legacy. Such leaders are likely to behave well while in office. They will not abuse human rights because they know that there's an end date to their rule. Going back to FDR, you know, FDR at the height of his power went as far as beginning to pack the Supreme Court, right, to get his way. So even in a democracy like the U.S., the notion that, you know, you can rule forever has this poisoning effect of infecting leaders to think that they can do whatever they want and get away with it.
What about a country like Libya? And the brother leader, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, which never actually even had presidential elections, probably didn't even have a constitution for that matter. This is a man who actually ruled for 42 years. And there are a lot of people on the African continent who say that he actually was a sort of terrific leader.
Yes, so individuals are great, but individuals do not live forever. And so, you know, ultimately systems win out. And I think that, you know, when you think of Lee Kuan Yew, you know, people tend to focus a lot on Lee Kuan Yew, the man, and not enough time is spent focusing on the system that he built. Mm-hmm. So part of the reason why Singapore endures is because of the system that was built around him, that survived him. And you know, first of all, Lee Kuan Yews are very rare. And so we shouldn't bank on, you know, lacking out and getting a Lee Kuan Yew.
And he was a prime minister, by the way, not an elected president.
Yes. So,
what is the difference? Tell us about the difference between a parliamentary system and a presidential system, for example.
Because, yeah, I think that if you look at any successful leadership, be it, you know, China or Singapore or even Botswana, whether they're democratic or not, there's always a system of accountability. The question is, you know, how many people can hold the leader accountable? So I would argue that even under Lee Kuan Yew, Singapore was a dictatorship by committee. Yes, he was the face of it, but there was a system around it. The Communist Party is a system it's moving towards a personalist rule now, which is a danger for China. But for a long time, it has been a system. Botswana was a system. And so even under dictatorship, systems tend to outdo personalist rule.
And under Lee Kuan Yew, one might actually note that there was zero tolerance of corruption in Singapore.
Yes, and again, you know, that again points to you know, rule of law, the belief in the rule of law, because, you know, if you think of Lee Kuan Yew, he was not able to be present everywhere, so he must have had a system that made sure that, you know, the policeman was not taking a bribe,
delegated the responsibility,
yes, and people were actually doing what they're supposed to do.
And he actually went out of his way, for example, to reach out to the majority population, the Malays, who were actually backward in comparison with his community, which was Chinese, and the Indians, and was able to figure out a way of dealing with them to help him, help them to help develop them so that they can actually develop the country.
Yes. And again, that's why, you know, we should consider him as a rare exception here. Because most life presidents, what they tend to do is pack their government with their co-ethnics at the exclusion of everyone else. They tend to, you know, if you take the example of your home country, Uganda, they tend to degenerate into chaos after so long. You know, Museveni has been in power for 32 years now. And Uganda is, you know, insecurity is spiraling out of control. Ugandans are beginning to get poorer now over time. And that's, you know, that's a sign of a leader who's run out of steam and is now, you know, grasping at the last bits of energy that he might have while in office.
He wouldn't agree with you because the last time I checked, he actually says that Uganda has never been more peaceful, more developed since about 5,000 years ago.
Well, I mean, so he has a new highway to the airport to show the world.
Built by the Chinese?
Yes, but if MPs are being shot in the streets of Uganda, you know, that's no security. If young women are being kidnapped and murdered in Uganda, that's not security.
You know, some African leaders say that they really shouldn't be lectured about democracy. They shouldn't be lectured about term limits, especially by the Europeans, because most of Western Europe, as we talk, has no term limits. But they do not talk about the difference between their systems of government, which are supposed to be parliamentary democracy, and the system that they are under, which is presidential system. Tell us, what's the difference?
So, I mean, yeah, the difference is that under a presidential system, the president is elected by the people and has a fixed term in office. So they can do whatever they want within the fixed term that they have in office without risk of being ousted. Most constitutions allow for impeachment, but impeachments are very rare. Under a parliamentary system, the prime minister is continuously accountable to MPs and can be voted out at any time, which tends to make them more responsive than presidential systems. So Angela Merkel, for instance, has been in office for a very long time, but even this week she's been going through crises, you know, over the immigration issue and had to be accountable to her fellow members of the German Bundestag.
We should also perhaps point out that these are also societies, sincerely, where the vast majority of people are educated or socially and politically conscious, and in fact they actually conduct elections. And people have the right to own an opinion to the extent that they can decide to stay away from Angela Merkel if they don't think that she's doing a good job or not. Correct?
Absolutely.
What about you, Kamisa? There are some people who say that in some particular African countries, you do have individuals who actually happen to be uniquely gifted. That these are people, sincerely, who seem to be politically, at least, God's gifts to their countries. That without these particular individuals, these countries would collapse.
So I don't believe in this theory. I think that maybe those individuals who do, first of all, believe that they're unique. They might be some narcissistic, a little bit narcissistic, and they do tend to create a culture of themselves in the country. But I do not believe that anybody is indispensable. I think that once you're elected by a country and you're put in there, the people that you're ruling do not have to have a PhD to know whether you are doing a good job or a bad job. They will know whether they have water running in their faucet. They will know whether they have jobs available to themselves. They will know whether they have security that allows them to go to work or have their children go to school and come back safely. And once they do not want you anymore, they do get rid of you. And when you were talking, I was thinking about Blaise Compaoré of Burkina Faso a couple of years ago, who was ousted after spending 27 years in power. Look, he wanted to change the constitution to add or to remove the term limits from the constitution. The people of Burkina Faso just decided one day that they were done with the man. They wanted to get rid of him. They wanted to have somebody new. I remember watching TV. I was in Dakar when that happened, watching TV, and a young Burkinabe who was maybe 25 years old went on TV and said, look, since I was born, the only president I've known is this man. I want somebody new. So I think, so those individuals who think that they're indispensable need to go and visit graves from time to time, and that will probably inspire them.
Well, Burkina Faso happens to be only one example, because let's go to Equatorial Guinea, where you have Teodoro Obiang. I mean, this man came to power in 1979, actually executing his uncle, because he said at the time that his uncle was undemocratic. He was a dictator.
Right. So he came into power way before I was born, which is a problem.
And
if I'm able
there.
To be on TV to talk about him when he's been in power since 1979, I think it is a problem. Equatorial Guinea is a very complicated country and context because of the natural resources that are in the country. And I think that when Theodore took power, what he did is he created this patronage system around him and created a system of his own family members and friends.
His son, actually, one of his sons is his vice president.
True. See, that's a problem in itself. So when you create a system where your family and friends are able to exploit the resources of the country, and you're the only person who is rich, or you're the only family who has 90% of the wealth of a country, then it becomes a problem. Equatorial Guinea, I'm not sure where the country is going in terms of democratic change, but, you know, he could face the same fate as Blaise Compaoré did in Burkina Faso.
Mary, what about Rwanda? Overwhelmingly, nearly 100%, we are told, voted for, you know, removal of the term limits in Rwanda.
The issue of the case of Rwanda, that's what she was saying. I don't believe there is somebody who cannot be replaced, normally. And sometimes with the leadership, there are two things. There is leading with the interest of seeing a country move from one point to another, seeing the people move from one country to another. But if you are leading for your own interest, then you would not consider the issue of term limit. But if you want to see the country moving forward in terms of democracy, there is no way you can tell me you are going to say you are indispensable, because there are other people who are coming up. I believe in Rwanda there are zillions and zillions of people who can be able to replace
the current president. But President Kagame will tell you it is not about Kagame. It is not him. It is the people that, in fact, are forcing him, really,
partly to stay
in power.
Partly I see the reason why he usually claims on that argument. But again, I would consider the case of FDR. When FDR came to U.S., became a president, there was economic depression, there was international crisis, which was the Second World War II, but nevertheless...
He came after Hoover, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. And there was, like, that kind of fear of, like, if he takes off, maybe we won't achieve... And he had a lot of reforms, by the way, for U.S. Social Security started at that time.
Right.
The Medicare started at that time. So Kagame, when he came in, there was a genocide. And that marketed him internationally that he's indispensable. But guess what? If he's considering that the country shouldn't go back to the same routine thing, it is time to think to hand over to another person.
Ken, there was no genocide in Uganda. President Museveni, in fact, says that he is the only man, the only Ugandan who has the vision to think. He's the only one who can actually think for the country. The rest of Ugandans, their job is to implement his vision.
Yeah, and you know, as she said, that's the height of narcissism, to think that out of millions and millions of Ugandans, he's the only one who has an idea of how Uganda can progress. And, you know, the evidence is trickling out now that he's run out of steam, and, you know, he's having to arrest his own security people, which is, you know, telling us that the system is collapsing under its own weight.
We'll come to that later. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, of course, Esther Githui-Yuwat. And of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter herself again, Esther Githui-Yuwat. Take it away, Esther.
Thank you, Shaka. We've received excellent social media feedback this week. New Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed wants to amend the constitution to introduce term limits on his post, but that's in stark contrast to many of Africa's entrenched leaders who have sought to extend their time as head of state. This leads us to our question of the week, which asked, which do you support, term limits or leaders for life, and why? And let's start with a tweet from Isaac Baha, who writes, it's a must for Africa to have term limits. Leadership isn't a private property or a hard-earned personal trophy. Leaders should know when to leave the stage. Life leaders don't leave behind healthy economies, only fat overseas accounts plus many kids. We have another tweet from Sireko MP, who writes, in case of Africa, Uganda in particular, I support term limit plus age limit. Political leadership is not hereditary. Now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Okugbo Omunua Idaholo from Abuja, Nigeria, who writes, I'm strongly in support of term limits because the ideas that govern a state or society are far more important than an individual's perpetual stay in government. The public good must take precedence over the private good. Any individual who occupies state house must make it a priority to use his or her period in office to leave a lasting legacy in the life of the nation. And let's go to another comment from a Facebook fan, Obasugie Obasomudiemen, who writes, Shaka, I don't think that leaders for life is an option. The leaders for life syndrome is not debatable, in my opinion. It has long been dumped in the vehicle of historical oblivion. And our last Facebook comment comes from Kasiabante John Jackson, who writes, Africa's problem is not the constitution's term limits or age limit. It is lack of morality and integrity by African leaders. And a reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback. If you are a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. To comment on our Facebook page, just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. To join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. To watch us live on your mobile device, download the VOA mobile app. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll have an in-depth discussion on decentralized systems of governments in Africa. In Uganda, it's called decentralization. In Kenya, devolution. In Nigeria and Ethiopia, it's called federalism. The transfer of authority from central to local government is our conversation on the next Straight Talk Africa. Wow. Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests have a lot of social media comments to discuss. Over to you.
Thanks, Esther. And today we are talking about the significance of constitutional presidential term limits in Africa. Our guest, Kamisa Kamara, Director of Sub-Saharan Africa Partners Global, Mary Uwera, Coordinator, Watch Democracy Grow Organization, and Dr. Ken Opalo, School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. Again, I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. I really have to apologize to you, Ken, because there's no democracy in Studio 47. When a producer says you go for a break, you have to go, just like a soldier on a parade square. I hope you will find some space in your beautiful Kenyan heart to forgive me for that.
Absolutely.
Could you please pick up from where you left?
Yes. So and one other point that I wanted to make was on the question of thinking about individuals. So with the example of, say, Uganda or even Rwanda, we tend to focus on the individual men in power, and invariably they're men. But we tend to forget about the people around them, the very few people around them who depend on them for this economic sustenance.
The hunger zone.
Yes, who want to keep them in power, right? So, you know, Robert Mugabe was kept in power by a few men who were benefiting from his corrupt rule. Similarly, in Uganda, there are a few people who are benefiting from Museveni's inept rule and want to keep him in power. Even in Rwanda, where, you know, Kagame has a more efficient form of public administration, it's still true that economic benefits are accruing to only a small group of people at the very top. And so those individuals should also receive some attention. And finally, you know, if you look at the DRC, which is this slow-motion train wreck that's been going on for the last 2 years, the people who are benefiting from Congo's mineral resources, including big multinational companies, have a stake in having an absentee president who is better, you know, would rather play video games than worry about stabilizing Congo and giving 80 million Congolese people a true shot at economic success.
Do you have any incontrovertible evidence that the DRC president, Joseph Kabila, in fact is preoccupied with playing video games?
That's what's been reported out there.
Well,
I've never seen him do it.
Well, we have at least been told that we should expect an election on December 23rd this year, and that Kabila is not going to be one of the candidates.
Well, but he's running campaign ads already, which is interesting.
Let me ask you a question, Kamisa. This is obviously under your watch. Let's go to Senegal.
Okay.
What makes Macky Sall tick? In March 2016, there was a referendum in Senegal, not to remove term limits, but in fact to reduce the presidential term, which was 7 years, to 5.
So Senegal is one of those success stories of democracy in West Africa, but also in sub-Saharan Africa. I don't know if you remember, but Macky Sall arrived in power after the people of Senegal had made sure that Abdoulaye Wade, who wanted to cling to power, left.
He had to go.
He had to go. We're not playing with our constitution. Our constitution is not a scrapbook where you can just come and make up your own rules. The constitution says that you have to leave. Abdoulaye Wade had the constitutional court on his side, so he was able to run in the presidential election. But the people of Senegal went to vote to make sure that he could not be elected. So Macky Sall arrived, brought in by the civil society of Senegal. He was there, and they made sure that he knew and was reminded on an everyday basis that it's the people of Senegal who brought him there. He wanted to show them that he was up to the task and that he was grateful to them and that he was a real and true Democrat. And that's the symbolic gesture that he made to reduce the number of years that a president could be in power. So now, instead of 7 years, the president of Senegal will only rule for 5 years. twice maximum and then leave power.
You know, some of his colleagues probably might think that he's crazy.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. But I think it's a positive sign. Senegal has been this very stable country where there has never been any
peaceful transition of power.
The security and defense forces of Senegal are one of the most responsible, responsive, professional of the entire continent. And I think Senegal is really on the right track and can give a very good example for other West African countries, but also for the entire African continent.
Interesting. Something else is also happening again in West Africa. We're talking about Benin.
Yes.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Patrice Talon.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about, term limits of two terms. This man, in fact, wants to reduce from two terms to one 6-year term, just like Mexico.
So, we were saying a few minutes ago that those presidents who are in power do create this myth around their own personality and them being the reason why the country is breathing. I think what we're seeing across the African continent more and more is that it's not only politicians who are interested in politics.
Mm-hmm.
Businessmen are also looking into politics and think that they have something to offer. Patrice Talon is not a politician, he's a businessman. So what he sees in the presidency is, you gave me a mandate. This is what I propose, and I can do it in 6 years. And I think it's a good idea. It might be a good idea. It might force presidents to really show what they're capable of. And at the end of it, he gets a review and then can pack up and leave.
Maria, what about that? That seems to be really an aberration, not the rule.
Yes, but... She just mentioned of actually business people now getting interested in politics. The thing we should know is that actually for democracy to take effect on the continent and on the issue even of term limits, there must be a strong middle class group, strong enough to fight for its own stake, strong enough to facilitate strong institutions. So that is the case. They're like, you know what, if you are going to mess up, always when people have got a stake to protect, they will be induced to be into that.
I used to think so, of course, having taken some courses in political science, but what happened really in Ivory Coast and later what also happened and probably even nearly happened in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
Made me to be a little bit skeptical about that formula of middle class.
To be sincere with you, even Kenya, the reason why we see Raila Odinga and President Kihuru reconcile, it is because they are trying to see in the interest of the common good and their wealthy, or the economy of Kenya. It is not about them, as we would say. Because when you consider what you are going to lose in that crisis in terms of people, in
Kenya
terms of
more educated.
Yeah, exactly.
More
thank
exposed.
You. Thank you.
More urbanized.
Excellent.
And to a large degree, landless.
Landless, very good. So the reason why we see sometimes leaders cling, there is an issue of, to be sincere with you, African leadership, it's one way of acquiring wealth. If you could start from there, and actually that would be another solution, term limit would distribute wealth.
So people who come from probably humble beginnings are not particularly great candidates.
Okay, let the term limit come, let them go there, get what they can, if that is the notion of getting what you can. This is what is happening in our countries. Get what you can, leave alone, and let Kamira also come, get what she can, let Shaka come, get... I hope by the end of the day, the common man would also come into the circle.
Actually, I did a bit of research in that area, and I found out, surprisingly, that some of the more successful leaders, world leaders, who have also really contributed enormously to the development of their countries, grew up in middle-class backgrounds. And Lee Kuan Yew happens to be one of them. His father had two trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one is Fidel Castro of Cuba.
True.
But people who tend to come from very, very humble beginnings tend to have problems.
When you consider even actually in the West, that's why they don't need term limit. because people are there, you are there to serve people, not to acquire.
Yeah.
So when you come from that kind of, I would call a marginalized in terms of economy, then there is a way where you are going to go there on a notion, with the notion of rooting. To be sincere, I call it rooting.
That's true. And when I talk about middle class background, by the way, the kind of pedigree that some of these successful leaders come from, I'm not talking about material wealth, because these would include people like the Madiba of South Africa, Nelson Mandela. They would include a man like Julius Kambarage Nyerere, Mwalimu of Nyerere, of Tanzania. And they would include a man like the Osagyefo, Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. And you have Patrick from Nigeria. Good evening, Patrick. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Patrick, what about Tedla from New York?
Good afternoon.
How are you, my brother?
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for this inspiring discussion, Shaka. You always bring democracy. How many years we have been talking about democracy? Let me ask my beautiful ladies and gentlemen over there. Take, for example, my country, Ethiopia. When we have the same system for 27 years, we have nothing. Fight, destruction. Now, all of a sudden, we got one man, a good man, I can say, things start to change. But the crisis is, for example, if Ethiopians want to choose this man as their prime minister because of the system we have, ethnic federalism, we cannot choose for him. So for me, Africans, as diversified as they are in language, in culture, what is the best way of choosing a man or a woman we like? We should have a system so that those men will be elected by the majority of the people. When their term limits go, they will go peacefully. But if you tribalize African like we did in Ethiopia, it is a disaster. It is not, because we will never choose our own leader. It will be like Bantustanization, and then we'll have a tribal rivalry, and that will not be helpful for democracy, Shaka.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, my brother Ken. I think you could react to that.
Yeah, I mean, systems of government in Africa have not been responsive to the fact that these are multi-ethnic societies, especially in East and Southern Africa, where ethnicity tends to be salient. Now, after the Ethiopian Civil War, Meles had the idea of this ethnic federalism as a way of solving Ethiopia's problems. Now, the challenge, of course, is that a lot of power is still in Addis, and that's where all the action is. The states of Ethiopia are not as robust as they could be. It's a hard nut to crack. In some contexts, having proportional representation with a parliamentary system may have been the way to go in order to ensure that different ethnic groups have a strong say in how the government is elected and how the prime minister is kept accountable. Unfortunately, most African states have opted for presidential systems. Even the parliamentary ones, like South Africa and Botswana, still have a very strong tendency to the presidential side. So again, this is why term limits is a great idea, because at a minimum, it makes sure that every 5 or 10 years the slate is open, and anyone from any ethnic group has a shot at becoming president.
But what about the fact that when you talk about the new Ethiopian prime minister, who, frankly, everything I've looked looks like a guy that could probably bring about something that you would probably call a sort of trajectory change, really, in that region. What about the fact that they have a parliamentary system? You have to be a prime minister who gets appointed by the party that wins the election, or a coalition of parties that win the election and form a government, and then you appoint a prime minister as the first among equals. What about the fact that he is coming up with this idea, sincerely, of imposing term limits on that?
Yeah, and I think that within EPRDF, this would be a great move. Because if you look at the example of, say, the ANC in South Africa, CCM in Tanzania, even, you know, the ruling parties in Angola and Mozambique. In those countries, it's not parliament per se that's enforcing term limits, but the ruling parties themselves. And I think that, you know, leadership change within the party is good for the country. So when CCM imposes term limits on its own president, it ensures that Tanzania gets a president for 10 years and then you change to someone different.
But I think that you really have to give South Africa some credit, because let's face it, you have independent institutions here. You have the ruling party ANC, which was able to recall a president who happened to be a card-carrying member of the ANC.
Yeah, and you know, when you're talking about term limits, I think, you know, the broader social and institutional setup has to come into play, mm-hmm. too, right? Because, you know, presidents for life tend to exist in societies, as we alluded to earlier, where the ruling family and a few families around them call the shots, both in politics and in the economy.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Now, when you have places like South Africa or Ethiopia, where there's increasingly a broad set of players, then even the parties themselves will have this notion that, you know, even within the party president gets 10 years and has to move aside. So you don't have, you know, people like Raila Odinga, who's been the opposition leader forever, and you also don't get presidents who run countries forever.
Now, again, let me ask you this question. There was a man called Lord John Emeric Acton, a great British historical intellectual. He once said that power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That great men are almost always bad men. True. What triggered this?
Yeah, I mean, it's the idea that, you know, the great men are constrained men, right? Men who, for a variety of reasons, whether through religion or, you know, other social forces, find themselves having guardrails to make sure that they behave well. Because, you know, if you take Barack Obama, and I tell my students this all the time, and make him president of Zimbabwe without any constraints, you will get a Mugabe, right? And so the trick here should be to try as much as possible to put guardrails around these presidents, mm-hmm. and give them term limits, so that, you know, every day when they wake up and act, they know that after 5 years or 10 years they'll be out of office, mm-hmm. and their successor may not be very nice to them. You know, the Chilubas of this world know what happens when you leave office having done bad things and your successor decides to prosecute you for crimes committed while in office.
I guess that we have a caller from the United Kingdom. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Shaka.
What is your name, please?
My name is Kingdom, and I'm actually calling from London, United Kingdom.
Okay, what is your question, Kingdom? You have a minute.
I'm actually just going to make a contribution. First of all, let me commend you for your program and your guests in the studio. They are making very remarkable contributions.
Profoundly honored for your compliments and support.
From my point of view, that experience have shown that Africa's problem is actually from the West. Mm. For mm-hmm. those of them that perpetuate themselves in office are supported by either multinationals that are benefiting from the natural resources within the African countries, or they are friends of their Western allies. Because once you're not dancing to their tune, they either sponsor the people, like it happened in Egypt, it happened in Tunisia, it happened in Libya. They find a way to get you out. Unfortunately, we have African leaders who are unpopular and they hold on to power. And because the people are so poor, they bring money when it's time for election to buy their votes. Unfortunately, the people who have the power are so gullible that they forget so soon. And they go about the immediate benefit of that time, and afterwards they go back to poverty and begin to suffer for another round for those of them that the elections are within the term limit.
Kingdom, I'm afraid the kingdom time is not our best ally. I'm afraid the kingdom time is not our best ally, but I think your point is well taken. Thank you. Let's go to Ghana. Ghana, good evening, Tafa. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Hello, good evening, Shaka.
I am hugely terrific. How are you today?
I'm good, Shaka. I'm good.
Your question. Ghana, you have a minute, please. You have a minute.
Yes. Thank you. I wouldn't have a problem with this so-called time limit. But, you know, Shaka, in Africa, our problem is that the greedy, they have the leaders who come to power, and they select some people around them and their family members and their ethnic that they belong to, helping them and left the others. So that's why time limit in Africa is very, very important. Mm-hmm. And we have to fight for it. Every African youth, whatever you are, Africa, we have to fight for this time limit because only few are benefiting. Only few. You have, look at Museveni, your country. He make one of the most ridiculous comments ever president have ever made, that the more he stay in power, the more he get more experience. How can we allow some people continue to be in power? I am against it. I'm against it.
Well,
Western world, in Britain, they don't have time limit, but their leaders are working for everybody. But in Africa, it's different. So in Africa, time limit is very, very important. Thank you very much, Shaka. God bless you.
You're most welcome, Tafa, and God bless you too. Well, we cannot say goodbye without sharing our great joy for having known and worked alongside our beloved friend and colleague Leo Sarkisian, who died June 8th at his home in North Andover, Massachusetts, at age 97. Leo was first hired by the legendary Edward R. Murrow at the Voice of America, and he had a long and storied career as the original VOA music man. He is the father of Music Time in Africa, founding VOA's hugely successful and longest-running English-language radio music show in 1965. His love for Africa, its music and people was boundless. Our hearts and prayers go out to Mary, his dear wife of 69 years, to his VOA family, who will miss him dearly, and to the people of Africa who truly loved Leo. May Leo's spirit and the joy he shared with all of us live on in each of us. Well, on that note, our distinguished guests are Kamisa Kamara, Mary Uwera, and Dr. Ken Opalo. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, for many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.